Diane Craig was a nurse passing by when she noticed a man going into cardiac arrest from running. She jumped out of her car, she performed CPR until the ambulance arrived. Her quick acting saved his life, and he would make a full recovery. Justin Meeks was a name to remember from 2008 as he was working security when a gunman stormed the Borderline Bar and Grill in California. In an attempt to protect those inside, Justin, just 23 years old, lost his life as he stepped in to save patrons amid the violent chaos. As it turns out, Meek's passion for protecting people had stretched really back into his childhood, his family said. He worked as a junior lifeguard, saving swimmers, protecting them, and now as a security guard. His pastor, when asked about him, said, "Justin was about taking care of others. That was his heart." So what do these two people have in common? That they are both hometown heroes, people who grew up in their communities with those that they served and those that they helped. In the gospel today, we are invited to journey home with Jesus, where he grew up, where he would have expected to be received as a hometown hero. Here he is on the heels of the resurrection, where he not only raised Jairus' daughter from the dead, and he gave the woman with a 12-year-long bleeding disorder her spiritual and her communal life back, but now he comes home, and Jesus is on a spiritual high after making a name for himself in ministry. He enters the synagogue on the Sabbath, and he begins to teach. He gives a talk in the synagogue, and Jesus makes a real hit. He impresses everyone. The first reaction is, wow, we had no idea he was this good. Where'd he get all of this? How did he get so wise all of a sudden? They begin to wonder, how did he get such ability? But Jesus enjoys his 30 minutes of fame. It reminded me of this past Father's Day. I attended the Seventh-day Adventist Church with Jermaine Smalls from our choir. He sings on the praise team at his church. He is a Seventh-day Adventist. And so it was quite an honor for him to be asked to speak for Father's Day. Even though he was not a father himself, he spoke about his journey with his father, a journey of forgiveness, and he spoke about God as his father. And I was so proud of him. I checked in with him afterwards to inquire how his church reacted, seeing him go from a singer to a preacher, and he told me that they were in awe. In fact, he said some people told him that he should go to seminary and become a minister there. Jesus experiences in this gospel a similar awe, right, from his hometown folks after his talk. Except for Jesus, the accolades and the awe were short-lived. Because in the next breath, they began to cut him down with statements like, "He's just a carpenter, Mary's boy." Some theologians believe that statements like these, referring to him as the son of Mary without mention of his father, Joseph, which is the normal way to refer to genealogy during Jesus' day, that this may have been an indication that they may have been questioning his legitimacy as Joseph's son. Other theologians wonder if it was an indication that maybe some of the locals were perhaps accusing Jesus in their heart of economically abandoning his family. For if his mother Mary is a widow by now, as we don't really hear much from Joseph through the latter parts of the scriptures, it assumes that she would likely be dependent on her oldest son for a living. And so maybe they were thinking that Jesus should be somewhere making stuff and fixing stuff for money instead of preaching and teaching and healing and gallivanting off somewhere. So in this crowd are folks who feel that they have known him since he was a kid. And it's what they say in the scriptures. "We know his brothers," they say, "James and Justice and Jude and Simon. And his sisters, aren't they here with us?" But his sisters' names remain silent in this text, only centering the names of the male children. Are they holding on to rumors of Jesus' childhood? When they ask who does he think he is, what do they mean? We don't know completely what's happening here, but his neighbors shift from a place of awe, and they appear suspicious at his renown, questioning his wisdom and the mighty works that he had done by his hands in the ministry and other places. To them, Jesus is just the carpenter, the son of Mary. And perhaps from his hands, more mundane things, perhaps, are expected. So they reject him. They trip over what little they believe they know about Jesus, and they pigeonhole him in. And they cannot go any further with him or his message to find their faith for great things to happen in their lives or in their community. They cannot find their faith in him except for a few people who did and were healed there by Jesus of their sickness. So in the gospel today, Jesus suffers rejection. We have a God who understands that experience. How many of you have ever experienced rejection? Wow, look at the hands, right? Because rejection is part of the business of our world, isn't it? It comes in an endless variety of forms. Sometimes it comes in not getting the job, or a parent whose approval always seems to be just out of reach, a parent who decides maybe that they don't want a parent at all, a spouse who may come home one day to say, I don't love you anymore, and in fact, I love someone else, or maybe a friend who suddenly blindsides us with betrayal, or maybe more recently, we endured a government that rejected a call by the people for a ceasefire in the war in Gaza. But yesterday, you may have heard, Hamas agreed to the U.S.-backed ceasefire and a hostage release plan with the caveat of demanding written guarantees that mediators will continue to negotiate a permanent truce once the first phase of the plan goes into effect. This is good news for the children. So today, Jesus comes to teach us about rejection, friends. There's no doubt that rejection causes an acute kind of suffering, if you've ever experienced it. Nobody likes it. It cuts lingering wounds that can splinter in lots of different directions. It can lodge itself deep in our memory, alter the way that we see ourselves, that we see others, that we see situations, and even the way that we see God. This week, a friend who is struggling with addiction text me that he has made up his mind to go into detox. And so I text him back that I was so proud of him. And then a day later, he screenshot a rejection letter to me from the facility that wouldn't take his insurance. And then he responded in big, bold letters, "You still proud of me now?" He saw himself and the rejection as one and the same. He convinced himself that the rejection said something about his worth and his value. It didn't. I simply replied, "Yes, I am. And there are other places to check that will take your insurance." And a day later, he texted me that he was on his way to Norris. So rejection doesn't mean that goodness isn't present. It just means that there's a blindness to see it. The pain associated with rejection is often rooted in our need for social connection and acceptance, as well as the value that we place on the connections with others. So the emotional impact of feeling excluded can remain significant. And when we face rejection, it may trigger a range of strong emotional responses like sadness, frustration, and self-doubt. These feelings are natural, and they reflect the value that we place on our social bonds and our aspirations. So recognizing the nature of rejection can help us approach it more constructively, seeing it not as a personal flaw, but as a part of the human experience. This understanding can help us build resilience, enhance our self-worth, and construct a healthier, more positive approach to setbacks and disappointments, as Jesus does. Now, experts tell us that there are 5 steps initially that we can take to help us navigate rejection. First, they say we should recognize and accept our emotions without judgment. Second, we should seek support by talking to other friends, family members, or a therapist about our feelings. Third, we should reflect on the circumstances of the rejection to understand it better. Was there something more that I could have done? To learn from the experience and remember that rejection is not a reflection of our worth. Fourth, they say we should remind ourselves of our value beyond that single relationship or encounter and practice self-care. And lastly, they tell us that we should decide on our next steps, to let it go and move forward, to stay open to future possibilities, to view each rejection as a chance to grow further and enhance our skills and our experience, knowing that there are other relationships, other opportunities, and other encounters just waiting for us to focus on that will be ready to embrace who we are. So what can we learn from Jesus when rejection finds its way at our doorstep? What lessons does Jesus teach us today about how to navigate rejection? First, he reflects on the impact of the rejection, and Jesus takes the time to feel it. He doesn't ignore it, he embraces it, and he offers no judgment, not to himself or to them. And knowing Jesus, he most certainly took the experience in prayer, because Jesus talked to God about everything. And so we must remember in those moments to pray. Second, Jesus recognizes and accepts his limitations in the face of rejection and a lack of faith to trust him to do more. And sometimes we have to acknowledge our limitations in these experiences of rejection. Third, Jesus, he works where he can make a difference with those who are ready. Those who heard his talk weren't ready, but there was a small group of sick people who were ready. And so Jesus worked where he could, and he made a difference for them. Fourth, Jesus moves on. He doesn't get stuck in the experience of rejection. He doesn't hold grudges. He doesn't run them down. He loves through it. And he calls together his team of disciples after this experience, and he sends them out two by two to continue the work of healing the world. The point is that rejection is never the end of the story. It is often just the beginning of something new. So when we experience rejection, perhaps we're being invited to be brave, to be patient, to stay in awe of what is next and around the corner for you, to nurture new relationships, to find new senses of community, family, mission. I remember a time when I was touched by rejection, and I have experienced rejection on many levels in my life because of my race, my gender, my church, and even my role as a woman priest. I remember calling an aunt when I was being ordained to invite her to my ceremony. And in the heat of my excitement, she said, "Are you sure God has called you and you haven't called yourself?" I said, "Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure." And she said, "Well, you know, many are called, but few are chosen." And then she decided not to attend. And so while it was initially hurtful, I think perhaps it may have been difficult for her to see this little girl that she used to keep and discipline becoming a priest or a pastor who could dialogue with her on spiritual things. Or maybe there was some trauma that she experienced that just kept her from being ready. Whatever it was, I knew that my aunt loved me. And I knew that when this rejection happened to me, I had to ask myself some deeper questions. How do I get my heart out of this space? Who do I turn to? I recognized that I needed help because I loved my aunt, and I knew that my aunt loved me, but who better to help us than Jesus, who not only experienced rejection, but successfully navigated it every time. Every time Jesus experienced it, he successfully navigated it. In fact, every week during Mass, there's this special part in the Mass during the consecration where I say, lift up your hearts, and you respond, we lift it up to the Lord. So in moments of rejection, we have an open invitation to lift up our hearts to God, to invite Jesus in, to let him work a heart session, to help us move forward, to realize that rejection is not our heart's final destination. It's not our heart's final resting place, and that there's always more that God has in store for us. I remember when my grandson was little, he used to complain about me carting him around from church to church and meeting to meeting all the time. And when he was 12, he announced to me that he was quitting church. No more religious ed, Nanny. No more Sunday service. I thought, he is rejecting everything I was trying to teach him. But in 2023, I was surprised that the journey took an unexpected turn. I was invited to his high school, Virtus, to receive a community award. But what they didn't tell me was that my grandson would be introducing me. And so as he strutted up to the podium, he opened his remarks at 16 years old by saying, "Good afternoon. My name is Jordan Brown, and today I'm here to present an award to a good friend, a good pastor, a good grandma, and all the above. Not only is she all of these, but she's one of the leading activists in working for racial justice. She leads a group of community partners and parishioners at Spiritus Christi Church called Spark. The work that she's doing and continues to do is an inspiration to me, and I am proud to call her my grandma. The woman I am calling up today is Myra Brown." And I have to tell you that that introduction brought me to tears. I got my reward in that moment. And I thought to myself, is this the same kid who challenged me to an eating contest when he said that the loser must give the winner a back massage? And before we even began to take our first bite, he smugly looks at me and says, "Go easy on my shoulders, Nanny." Or the same child who complained that I drug him all around to every church and service and meeting that I had. Yes. But rejection didn't have the last word. And it didn't have the last word with Jesus. And it won't have the last word with you. So when we face rejection, we can turn a corner. Jesus turned a corner, and so will you. We are simply called to be open to follow Jesus in the journey from awe to rejection to new possibilities. Amen.